From the Lynn DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of October, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. We'll hear a story about a legislator in Mexico that has some interesting things related to midwives and agriculture and well, it's not really true, but I found it of interest, so you may get a kick out of the story, or maybe you'll just find it a little bit disturbing. I think probably both from the agricultural side. And then we'll hear about the Hogs and Pigs Report for the month of September from Jason Franken. He's at the University of Missouri. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss what's been happening in the agricultural weather with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It's public radio, the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day settled at 4.28 and a quarter, down 4 1/4 cents. The March at 4.46, 4 lower. And May futures down 3 3/4 on the settlement price at 4.55 for the afternoon. The nearby November at 10.46 settled 10 lower in the soybeans. January at 10.64 and a half, down 9 3/4. And the March at 10.79 and 3/4, down 9 cents on the afternoon. Bean meal futures for the day at 3.32.50, down 7.90. The bean oil today at 44.53, 89 cents higher for the day. And the soft red winter wheat in the December contract at 603.5, down 11 3/4. The hard red December at 611.5, down 7 3/4 of a cent. Live cattle futures in Chicago, $1.30 lower at $186.40. Feeders at 248.12.5, down 42.5 cents. And lean hogs, $76.40 per 100 pounds, down 35 cents. Crude oil, $3.28 higher at $73.39 a barrel. Gasoline on the RBOB, that's the wholesale price at $2.08 a gallon. That's up 9 9/10 of a cent per the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, about 241 points higher at 42.269. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us to take a look at what happened in Chicago for the day and how things are going on the farm. Hi, Matt. Thanks much. I take it you're in the middle of moving from one field to the next. Thank you for helping out this afternoon. I know you're busy. What did you see in the marketplace today?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the markets were concerned, you know, you started out with some weakness earlier in the day and then that buying showed up like it has a lot lately. We tried to pare the losses. But then, you know, towards the close, we kind of ran out of gas, if you will, and it looks like some selling came in. I think a couple things going on. Of course, you got more hedge pressure that is present this week than what was last week, first of all. You know, when you look at, for instance, what went on last week, hey, the funds bought back a ton of soybeans, like 40,000 contracts. And the interesting thing is that the commercials pretty much sold that many. So the commercials were buying the beans off of the grower. That happened to a much smaller extent with corn, but that's what you see as a transfer of ownership, you know, from the funds having these things sold to the commercials having them sold. I'd be real cautious, you know, on beans. If the funds decide they don't want to go long, I think you'll see more days like today because you're not going to have anybody to offset all those shorts that the commercials have to enter into. So as they buy the beans off the grower, and it's very well known, not a ton of beans have been sold yet. There's a lot that needs to be sold. You know, if you don't have the funds on the other side of that, that could make a pretty rough go for this bean market.
Now, I know you talk to Arlen Suderman like I do on occasion from StoneX, and we'll have him on our Commodity Week program recorded later this afternoon. But did you get a chance to discuss the yield expectations his company has released this week? They raised their corn yield from the 182.9 to 184, and their bean yield from 53 to 53.5. I'm wondering if you did talk with him, what about, and if not, what you think of the yields?
You know, I haven't gotten to talk to him mostly because we've been so busy in the field. Occasionally I'll hear from him, you know, just to ask my opinion on this stuff too. But I am not surprised at all that they went up. I mean, ultimately, you've got to ask yourself with the early yield reports, you know, what could happen here, you know, and I've got to think that you could pick up some yield both definitely on corn. It seems like beans, there's been a lot of folks a little disappointed, you know, as far as bean yields are concerned, but as far as corn yields are concerned, you just haven't heard a whole lot of disappointment just yet. So I think they're on the right track. I think it's a distinct possibility, you know, that you could end up raising this thing. How much remains to be seen. But I would not go to sleep on the USDA potentially raising yields here for the October report.
Yeah, I was thinking about that as I was driving back from deep southern Illinois yesterday afternoon and not seeing again. I was there 2 weeks ago all the way to the tip. And not seen again this week. Very many people running in that part of the world. So much rainfall early on. Again, rain and from Helene, so they're just out of the field. But they weren't ready and probably won't be maybe for a week, I think, until they're really rolling. Except that on the other side, USDA's weekly crop progress report shows that nationwide we're ahead of average both for corn and soybeans, and we're not hearing from farmers about their yields. That generally tells me their yields are really good. They might say, oh, the soybeans were not as good as I thought, but that, I don't think I've heard anything about corn at all. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, as far as yields are concerned, you know, we track them pretty closely. You know, JSA and Ag Market, basically almost all of our customers, you know, will come in with yield reports. And so far, Todd, we're running definitely ahead of last year. And I'm talking double digits on corn as far as a percentage level. You know, and so obviously that's, you know, a 4 or 5 bushel increase. That's pretty consistent with what the USDA has been talking about. You know, we've seen bean yields up as well. So, but we've got to be cautious. I want to give a word of caution here. You know, there's a lot of question marks as to what do May yields look like versus April. And I think that all depends on, hey, did you get blessed with some August rain or not? Because I've heard some folks, for instance, in parts of Western Illinois, you know, that were extremely disappointed with May corn versus April corn. I'm sure that had a lot to do with the fact they didn't get any rain in August. So it remains to be seen. I do think early results are fantastic, though.
And finally, turn your attention to South America in this last minute that we have together. The pushing back of their planting season, I don't know that it has much of an impact other than shifting when they plant, because you generally will have enough rainfall. What difference does it make in your mind? And I suppose it could be just about when corn gets planted or second crop.
Yeah, I think that that's what it boils down to. We know they're going to plant the beans. There's no doubt that they're going to plant a lot of beans, 19th year in a row, you know, as far as what I've seen, the research we've shown. So they're going to plant the beans. We know that. But will they get planted in time? You know, for the grower that's already a little wary about planting, you know, corn in Brazil, I mean, they're wary because of input costs, just like everyone else. If they get pushed back a week or two, a lot of times that'll push them into the dry season as far as grain field goes. So, yeah, you've got to get that first crop bean planting done in decent fashion. We've seen before pushing back what that does. It definitely is supportive for corn later on. But as of right now, you know, most of the rainfall looks a little bit more normalized than what we saw before. And I have a hard time getting super friendly just yet on that.
Thank you much. We appreciate it. Have safe travels and a good harvest season.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
You too. That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. One quick news item for the afternoon. Reuters reported that a legislator from the state of Chiapas in the nation of Mexico has made an unsubstantiated and frankly not possible claim against transgenic corn. He told the Senate Agriculture Commission in Mexico that midwives in his state say more C-sections are being performed there because the backyard chickens the pregnant women are consuming are being fed natively grown GMO corn. Now, Mexico does not allow GMO corn to be cultivated there. The legislator claimed, because sometimes we feed native corn to the hens and then sell them to the market and women buy chicken in kilos or grams, which is cheaper, and that is why it reduces, and that is why there are more cesarean sections. The claim, then, is that natively grown corn, which, again, cannot be GMO by law, is causing, according to the midwives, says the legislator, women to not have enough strength to make the final pushes during delivery. For what it's worth, I thought the story was interesting on many levels, not the least of which is I've been binge-watching the PBS series called The Midwife in anticipation of season 14 this winter. I'm a friend of WILL and can watch the series on demand via the Passport app. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Now let's turn our attention to the most recent Hogs and Pigs report. Jason Franken of the University of Missouri says that there were very few surprises in it.
Record pigs per litter starting to sound like a broken record. The USDA September Hogs and Pigs report holds few, if any, surprises. As expected, the September 1st inventory of all hogs and pigs at 76.5 million head is up 1.69% from last quarter and almost 0.5% from a year ago, while the breeding herd is up almost 0.5% from last quarter, but down 2.2% from last year, and market hogs are 1.75% higher than last quarter and a bit higher than last year.
So there are more hogs on hand, and honestly, in general, they weigh more than they have in past years too, or at least nearly as much.
The abundance of heavier animals should put downward pressure on near-term prices. However, overall, there's just slightly fewer hogs weighing under 180 pounds than a year ago, which will be the market hogs arriving at processing plants from October 2024 through February 2025.
Those hogs, of course, will be going to market and others will not. They'll be farrowed, and it appears there'll be a few less of them. And more importantly, there will be more hogs per litter in the coming months, and that has some implications.
If reported farrowing intentions are realized and trends in pigs per litter persist, then spring and summer slaughter potentially could be higher than a year ago.
That, of course, is the production side of the hog market. Here's the consumption side as Jason Franken sees it.
Pork demand appears to be strengthening both domestically and abroad. The USDA revised forecasts of U.S. per capita pork consumption upward to 50.9 pounds per person in 2024 and 51.2 pounds per person in 2025. The U.S. exported 567 million pounds of pork in July, or 12% more than the prior July. Despite rapid appreciation of the peso, Mexico accounted for about 42% of July shipments, almost three times that of the second largest buyer, Japan, which only accounted for 15%, while Canada, China and Hong Kong, and Korea each represented about 7% of July shipments. With the strong July, the USDA raised estimates for third and fourth quarter U.S. pork exports to 1.7 and 1.9 billion pounds, which are respectively 10% and 5% above a year ago, raising annual exports by 5% over last year.
So consumption is strong, and it appears it will stay that way, as USDA's forecast is a rise of about 2.5% in 2025 to 7.4 billion pounds.
Still, taking everything into account, prices seem unlikely to surpass last year's levels. In general, hog prices tend to be higher in the second and third quarters, with lower prices in the first and fourth quarters. Consistent with that pattern, prices are forecast to drop to an average of $77.82 a hundredweight for the fourth quarter of 2024. For 2025, prices are forecast to average $77.23 a hundredweight in the first quarter and then rise seasonally to $86.68 a hundredweight and $89.78 a hundredweight in the second and third quarters, respectively. However, with similar farrowing intentions as a year ago, if growth in pigs per litter continues, then lower prices may be realized, especially if the current relatively strong levels of domestic and export demand soften. For the University of Illinois and the University of Missouri, I'm Jason Franken.
You may read more about the hog market from University of Missouri's Jason Franken on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Let's check in with the global growing regions and see how the climate forecasts look for them. We're now joined by Mike Tenorum. He is the president and CEO of T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today. I want to get right into this. It appears to me that we're going to have a really, at least for the moment, maybe for some time, quick harvest because it is dry across much of the Corn Belt. Despite the rain that came in with Helene, I know southern Illinois farmers are delayed a bit, and some others maybe in the Ohio Valley. Can you kind of give me your overview of where things stand today in the United States?
Yeah, for sure. Those areas that turned wet last week are actually going to be pretty happy when they come to plant their wheat, because there isn't very much rain out there for the next 10 to 14 days. In fact, some areas of the central U.S. will see no rain over that period of time. So that's very dry, Todd, because as you know, even though it is October, it still should be raining here and there. But there's basically no rain on the way to the west of Illinois over the next 10 to 14 days. And from Illinois on to the east, only some showers around, and most of those are only going to accumulate to less than a quarter of an inch. So this is a very dry pattern that we're still in, and that's going to help out with the harvesting and with the wheat planting that's taking place across the central U.S. The only concern might come later, which is where we will need some rain for wheat development, especially the hard red winter wheat crop in the plains. This lack of rain will eventually become a concern for them. But even if it does, and even if it doesn't rain that much later this month or in November, as we've come to learn over many years of doing this, what really matters is what happens in the springtime, and that's still 6 to 7 months away.
So we are coming out of the growing season here in the United States and South America. We're going into the bulk of the growing season. Wheat, of course, coming out of their winter time frame, particularly in Argentina. What does that crop look like today?
Well, they're in the middle of a significant drought. Most of that crop has been drier than normal for a long period of time. The drought basically started in early April, and it's still taking place now, even though we had a little bit of rain back in August. Now, as we move forward over the next 4 or 5 days, there's very little rain on the way because upper-level high pressure is still in place. Things are going to change, though, early next week. A very large system is going to move across Argentina, and there will be some significant rainfall with that. So there should be some dent in this drought for at least half of the wheat crop. The other half, though, is probably going to miss out on this event, which will leave weather 1 to 2 weeks from now important. It looks like we're still going to see a stormy period after that, because that system that comes through early next week will disrupt the jet stream enough to allow for additional rainfall. So once we get into it all, we think they'll actually end up with pretty much normal totals over the next 2 weeks. And then the question becomes, will normal totals over a two-week period in October override all the drought that's been taking place over the last 5 months? The answer is probably no, so we'll need to see more rain after this. But at least a reprieve from drought is going to happen in Argentina over the next couple of weeks.
Of course, in the United States, there are geographical differences between primary corn and soybean regions and some of the wheat regions. Is that the case in Argentina? And does the geography of that nation change related to what the conditions are like on the ground? For instance, drought in the wheat area and maybe not so much in other growing regions.
Well, their crops are fairly mixed evenly. I mean, there is more wheat produced in the southern region than the central and north, but most of their crops are mixed pretty well together, kind of like in Illinois, where you have a lot of corn and soybeans and you have wheat in the south. Maybe that's an easy way to think about the way Argentina produces their crops. So if you can get a big rain, it'll aid, you know, most of, or at least half of all those crops if you can affect half the belt. So just from looking at it that way, there will be some benefit from this event to all those crops that we're talking about. But we really want to see it in that southern area, because that's where most of the wheat is produced, and wheat is sensitive at the moment. Corn is only going to start to be planted over the next month or two, and soybeans really don't get going until December. So it's a little early to think hard about those. Sunflowers are being planted now. They could also benefit from rain like wheat, but they have a longer time period to get out of this situation.
Then turn your attention to Brazil, and I suppose maybe you could work your way northward, or work your way from the north to the south, as planting in the center west should be underway. They're waiting for rainfall there, though.
Well, you're right, and they usually cross the halfway planted mark on soybeans around October 20th to 25th. So all that planting essentially takes place from now through then, and then it continues for another 3 weeks. It's very dry in central and northern Brazil. Now, that's not totally unusual at this time of the year, because in the north, where around 15% of their soybeans are produced, they're in the dry season still, and that typically doesn't break until late October and November. Now, in key areas of Goiás and Mato Grosso, which is where around 40% of Brazil's soybeans come from, they should be getting out of the dry season about now and then gradually turning wetter every week all the way into the end of the year. They're not turning wet yet. It's going to be dry there for another week. And because of that, there is some concern over getting soybeans planted in a timely manner. And that certainly is a valid concern. But the thing you need to remember about soybeans in Brazil is that they'll never run out of time, unlike the U.S. Because in the U.S., we have a cold season that starts in the fall, and that essentially marks an end to how long you can produce corn and soybeans, because eventually you'll freeze them. That's not going to happen in Brazil. It's only going to get wetter. So they will get the crop planted. It just comes down to a matter of when. And then the other thing that would affect is when second crop corn is planted, because that comes in right after soybeans in this key central region. So that would end up being planted a little bit later if you plant your soybeans later. And those are kind of the risks that we're looking at. It does look wetter though, Todd, once we get about 1 to 2 weeks out. A pretty big cool front is going to sweep into the region a week from now, and that'll set the stage for storms late next week and then the following week. And if that all comes to fruition, then we'll only be about a week behind a normal weather, and that's really not that big of a deal.
Are the southern growing regions of Brazil in a different position than those in the center west? Are they wetter?
They certainly are. They average about 6 inches of rain every month of the year. So they don't really have a dry season and a wet season. It pretty much rains year round. They are a little bit dry, but nothing to be concerned about. And they're going to see some decent rains next week and even the week after that. That's primarily because a couple of cool fronts are going to move through. So our concerns over southern Brazil and Paraguay, which is right next door, are pretty low at the moment because they're just planting first crop corn now. They're starting to plant soybeans. And just based on the weather pattern, they don't look too dry. They don't look too wet. And we're just kind of in a waiting game. It's still very early to be overly concerned about anything going on down there.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you, Todd.
You're most welcome. That's Mike Tenora. He is the president and CEO at T-Storm Weather. That's T-Storm Online. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. We're online, on demand, anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. We're there this afternoon. After 6 o'clock, I'll try to post our Commodity Week program. We'll record with StoneX's Arlen Suderman this afternoon, along with Alan Dearden of Ag Review and Brian Stark of the Andersons. You'll hear all of that program during this hour tomorrow on our home station, and a portion of it on many of these radio stations tomorrow, and then again over the weekend. Or you can just go up online on demand to listen to Commodity Week. The address there, willag.org. That's willag.org. If you're out and about this afternoon, be aware that many farmers and those helping them will be moving grain across the landscape. Those vehicles oftentimes move very slowly. They'll be watching out for you, but they really can't do anything about those of you coming quickly up to them from the back end. So you need to be careful with that part of your driving experience. Pay attention on the roadways all the time, particularly during this fall season. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.